Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. We're here live at the Hot Stove Society.
I hate to interrupt the show, but I kind of needed to. Tom and I decided to sit down and clear a few things up because I was on social media. I learned a lot of strange opinions that might be going around in the world about your recent settlement. So I'll let you take it from there.
I know it's just your classic food in the news thing that we do all the time, but it happens to be me. I'm the new poster boy for the Seattle restaurant scene. I'm just glad it's in the restaurants and not in the post office. A little different thing.
So yeah. Let's go back and just like tell us what there was a lawsuit.
Yeah, well, about 5 years ago, we went to service charge in our restaurants instead of tipping, and it was unusual at the time. It's now a common practice, and I think the customers never did quite understand it, right? Because there's certain language you have to use for a service charge on your menus. It has to be on your guest receipt. It has to be on the menus and any place you have a price point. And so we thought we had our language correct, and
which basically said that you were, instead of giving a tip, you were already including that in the bill, and it was 20%.
No, it says really that there's a 20% service charge, and we tell people before they sit down and blah, blah, blah. So where the contention came was that the person who worked for us and who ended up filing the complaint against us suggested, as did her attorneys, that our wording was incorrect. On our menus, we would say 20% service charge, 100% goes right to our team, a forward team, and so directly to our team. And what we should have said was 100% goes directly to me, the house, and then I turn around and give 100% to the team. And so
because you have to distribute it, right?
I have to distribute it. It all comes in on credit cards, right? The money can't go directly to the server because it comes in credit cards. It gets deposited, then we bring it back out. But I think the confusion lies in the area of tips and service charge. You know, I don't know that everyone recognizes or knows that when somebody leaves a 20% tip on their tab, the waiter gets the majority of that, but then they have to tip out of that same fund. They tip out all their helpers, right? The bussers, the bartenders, the hosts, they all get a small part of that tip that you left for the waiter. So that's just the way it works. The kitchen sometimes gets a little bit. And so with service charge, it works almost the same, right? We charge you 20% service charge, just like you left a 20% tip. And then that money gets split up with the majority going to the waiters, and then the rest goes to the bussers, the bartenders, the hosts. But when it says on the menu that 100% goes to me, people freak out. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where the misunderstanding is. But even in tips, if you leave a tip on a credit card, that goes directly to me. I have to then cash that credit card, turn it in, report it to the IRS, and turn around and give the waiters the revenue that they deserve that they earned out of that gratuity. So it's virtually the same thing. It's just a little bit different. And so that's where the confusion came in, and that's where we were accused of using the wrong word. We used direct instead of indirect, and now we have paid our fine and we have settled. And it is it's super sad for me, you know.
Yeah.
Because I guess for me, when I would read the comments in the paper, it's like so many people were saying the nicest things. It brought tears to my eyes. It was so sweet. And but there's a lot of people out there that just assume that I was stealing from my team. And that is just not the case. It's never been the case in the 30 years. And I would tell people to think for a second, like, if I was stealing, Tina, if I was stealing if I was stealing your tips, how long would you work for me? You know, so just think about it
for you to figure out that, wait a minute, I'm not getting any tips.
Yeah,
right.
One day.
Exactly. Right.
One day. So it's unreasonable to think that I'm going to be perfect, but it's also unreasonable to think that when you think about it, I have 850 coworkers that I'm stealing their wages. Right. So so that's the only thing that kind of bothered me in the comments was that people don't stop and think a little bit. And but at the same time, we've settled. I'm happy for my team. Because much of the settlement is going to the people that many of them that still work for us. So they'll get a little Christmas money and I get to move on. It is what it is. And so I know it's been in the news. It's been super crazy, you know, doing interviews across the country because there's a lot of interest because many people are trying to decide to go to service charge or stay with tipping or. And there's some things about service charge that people need to understand a little bit. And what I love about it, it is a completely anti-sexist service charge, right?
Right.
There's no deciding if you think I'm pretty or not or whatever, and giving, you know, there's none of that. It's anti-racist, so that no matter who is serving you, it's the same tip. And it also, sometimes in restaurants, alcohol gets involved, right? You've had a couple of drinks, and now all of a sudden you want to decide who gets what. And so it takes a lot of ambiguity out of the service business. And what I really like about it from my end of things is, if you've had a bad meal with us, right, and you say, I'm not going to tip that waiter 20%. I'm going to give him 10%. Yeah. Might not have been the waiter's fault, honestly. It could have been the cook's fault, you know, slow timing. But if you've had a bad meal with us, with a tip system, you do that, right? You decide, okay, I'm only going to leave 15% today. If you've had a bad meal with us with service charge, you don't pay a thing. We have 100% refund guarantee. And so you're protected, I'm protected, the waiters are protected. To me, it's a more fair system. And until everyone is on the same playing field, you know, everyone has to pay the same wages, large and small companies and all that kind of stuff, I think this is a good solution. My ultimate solution, personally, would be that all the services included in the cost of right there on the menu. But right now, I pay a very different price for my team than a small restaurant does across the street. So I can't just raise all my prices to that point if not everyone's doing the same thing. Nobody would ever come to my restaurant. It's hard to tell online, right? Wow, his chicken's $40 and this guy's chicken is $30. I'm going to the $30 chicken. So that's what it would look like online. And so for me, I'm looking forward to the day when we're all on the same playing field and we can put this behind us.
I think we're pretty close. So thank you for taking the time to clear that up. So we go back to the show with the audience and all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Up next on the show, questions from you, our listeners. And if you have any questions about that, feel free to email us at our Facebook page. And we will take some questions and finalize that whole thought process.
Sure.
We're on Cairo Radio. It's 97.3 FM. How you doing out there? Yay! And we're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Jerry Rotaro, the chef in the hat.
And Tina, you've been on our Facebook page, and you've got some questions from our listeners, or if there's anyone in the audience that wants to step up and ask a question, you are welcome to. We have an extra microphone just for that reason.
Yep. Our Facebook page is very active. People love to have conversations and share recipes. And also, they have an opportunity there to ask you guys direct questions about their culinary quandaries.
And so that's at Seattle Kitchen, right?
Right.
Okay.
Beth Ringering is asking, she says, every week I make a big batch of roasted root vegetables, parsnips, sweet potatoes, carrots, to use in my lunches. What are some ways I can elevate this dish? How to elevate your root vegetables?
Well, roasted. I would definitely bring some kind of pesto, take some herbs and blend them, olive oil, a little bit of lemon, and salt and pepper, and just bring that with you, and then douse all those vegetables with that, put it between two pieces of toasted bread, and you'll have a fabulous vegetarian sandwich. That would be a good way to start my lunch.
Yum.
Hmm. Or you could, I don't know if you have a thermos or not. I always sent my kid to school with a thermos of hot something. More than half the time it was hot pan brown pot stickers in her thermos with a little soy sauce on the side. But you can make a little roasted vegetable soup, just puree the whole thing if you've got a batch. And it might be nice to take a little savory scone, like a chive scone or something like that, make a batch of those with some roasted vegetable soup. Sounds delicious to me.
Yum. All right, Janelle Tremaine is asking... She says, I recently went on a date and we got Ethiopian food. That's one of my favorites. The date went okay, but I fell in love with injera. Have you ever made it, and do you have any recommendations on how to make it at home? Injera.
I haven't made it because...
I have not made it, but it's a very simple process that I know of. Teft flour and yeast, a little water. Very simple. I mean, it's a very simple bread to make. All you have to do is leaven it, and you just cook it just like a pancake, or you can cook it in the oven.
Well, there's lots of injera irons, too, kind of like a crepe iron.
Yeah.
Where they put it out on the flat surface of the iron and spread it around with a stick. Is it baking powder, the leavening in that, or is it just steam?
I thought it was yeast.
Maybe it is yeast. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But
It's delicious, and that teff flour is so—it's like buckwheat.
It's very flavorful,
organic, and good.
It feels like you're eating something really good.
And then you just tear it, and you grab something with it, right?
So delicious. There's a little grocery store, an Ethiopian grocery store, on Martin Luther King and like 20th.
Yeah, I've been there.
Right over there. Yeah. So they could probably really help you out.
And here's the point of what I was going to say there. You know, it's like, yeah, you can make it yourself, but it's so fun to spend the day down on these little shops, right? Yeah. And getting a little bit of. Not just the injera, but a little bit of everything that they sell.
Duca, so Ethiopian coffee is spices. Great. Mm-hmm. It's one of my
favorite things to do is go to those Ethiopian restaurants over there and then hit the Fry Art Museum right after. It's like my favorite Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
All right. We have Joel here from our audience who has a question.
So both of you guys talk quite fondly of Vietnamese cuisine or food. And when trying it at home, the fish sauce is quite apparent in the smell when it just reeks at the house. Is there a way that I could use it so it doesn't just make it smell like I've been boiling fish for 2 days?
Just take it in, sir.
Come on, Joel.
You know enjoy
what?
It.
You can't have that good fish sauce and no smell. I mean, that's
the way it is. Right.
I think you should be grateful they don't have the factory right next door to your house.
Well, so, I mean, there is no way other than maybe you only do it in the summertime when you can have the windows and doors open. But it's a little bit like deep frying. It'll stick with your house for a little while. The other thing is don't cook with it. Use it like soy sauce. You know, a lot of times if you've steamed your vegetables, say, for your dinner, and just hit it with fish sauce and butter or fresh dill or something like that, then it doesn't stink up the house in the same way. But if you're making like the Vietnamese caramel where you're taking your palm sugar and you're taking it down to a caramel, and then you're adding your fish sauce and ginger to it, which would be typical, it boils up and dehydrates and does smell up the house. But it's a great
smell.
Steams
up the house with fish sauce. I mean, it's delicious.
Yeah, and you should think about that smell and think, damn, I'm a good cook.
It just look sticks at, to the
and
clothes.
Look at how
you
adventuresome
like
I am. Yeah, just how adventuresome I am. And, you know, I could be in Hanoi right now and it would smell like this.
Yeah.
And all those good things that come with that smell.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
Embrace the smell. I love that.
Embrace it.
Matt Copens is asking, he says, I'd love to hear your version of stroganoff. I use beef, but I'm interested in any take on stroganoff.
Well, you could use, normally it comes with beef. It's a traditional dish, but you could use chicken if you don't want to eat beef. You could actually use pork, which would be a great substitute for beef.
I'm not sure that's the question, Chef. What do you think? I think he knows you could use any kind of ingredient, but is there a difference in the sauce?
Well, here's how I would make it for me. I would just take a cast iron pan. I would sear some onions. I would add mushroom cap cut in quarters. I would put some fresh salt, pepper, thyme. I mean, fresh thyme, not fresh salt. Obviously, fresh salt. And just toss the whole thing together, saute it really nicely. I would cook some egg noodle on the side. Mm. I would remove everything from the saute pan, and I would re-sear all the pieces of beef. I would put everything back together, and I would drop everything on top of the egg noodle with a big giant spoon of sour cream. Lots of chopped chives, and then seasoned correctly, and then you'll have a wonderful beef stroganoff on your hand. Some people add Worcestershire, some people...
Really?
Oh, yeah, I've seen... Mm-hmm. I worked in a restaurant once where I was like, they couldn't figure out what a beef stroganoff was because they keep changing the recipe. But I've seen people using ketchup. I've seen using tomato paste. I've seen using all kind of crappy stuff. Make it simple. It's not supposed to be that complicated. Beef stroganoff is you have some beef, you're going to dice it, and you want to make a quick... beef stroganoff should not take more than 30 minutes for any inexpert cook to make. That's how quick it should be. Onions, mushroom, egg noodle, beef.
Yeah.
You know,
and I would suggest that if you do anything different, it's not beef stroganoff anymore.
Correct.
There's some dishes, like when you say beef stew, then you can have your way with it, right?
Right.
But stroganoff, I think, is a little bit more specific in that if you start to take it and add harissa or add, whatever to it, it's really not what it
You're
was intended
it.
To be. You're changing it.
All right. Karen Forsberg is asking, what do you do with a fennel bulb?
Oh, again, embrace it.
If you're in the Mariners game, you could probably throw it and nobody would know.
You know, sometimes what I do with it, I'll take a big pan and I'll melt some sugar into a caramel. Mm-hmm. And then I'll put little slices, little wedges of fennel into the caramel, some butter. And then I'll take a classic pie dough, pot brisé, and I'll add a bunch of black pepper to it so that it becomes more savory. so sweet hot.
Right.
And then I put the pie dough on top of the carameled fennel in the pan, and then bake it in the oven.
Fennel tatin.
And so a fennel tatin. Or, yeah. Well, it's not fennel tart. But tatin is apple, right?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, fennel tart tatin.
It would be a fennel tart tatin, yeah.
Yeah, so then once the pastry is cooked, you simply pull it out and you protect yourself so that you don't get any caramel on your skin, but you turn it out onto a platter and you should have a little light fennel tart tatin style thing, and it's a great little cocktail appetizer.
And I would flambé with Pernod or some kind of pastis, some kind of anise liqueur. I would just put a little bit on top and flambé the whole thing.
I put a little radicchio and fennel frond salad on top of that particular dish. It's in big dinners, as a matter of fact, if you ever want to make that.
Nice. And fennel is a great pickling, confit, cooked very slowly in olive oil, bay leaf, just a few branches of thyme, couple garlic clove, and cook that very slowly in the oven for a couple of hours until it's totally tender. And then keep that in your fridge and use them as you need to add to your salad, to add to the garnish, garnish to a chicken dish, a fish dish, or whatever. It's a great way to keep them. And you can also put them in jars and give them to your friend for Christmas.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to jump into some thoughts for beginner cooks and what are the best cookbooks for them, according to Eater. So that's very exciting. Coming up right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show with Chef Tom Douglas and Chef Rotu Rowe. Very nice,
this
Chef. Very
French
nice. We are in the Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio. Welcome. Thank you. They were so mesmerized by your singing that they forgot to clap. It's time to start thinking about the holidays. I'm okay to start the process. And like I said, we are promoting our own signed Seattle Kitchen Radio show aprons,
correct,
signed by both you and I.
But you also started a while back with your fruitcake, so that's already...
No, I was saying a while back is when to start making your fruitcake, so they have time to age,
correct,
before you give them away as Christmas presents. And I will put a picture on, but Tina, did I send you a picture of our fruitcakes? Jackie and I made fruitcake. We'll put a picture up on our Facebook to show you. They are tonight when I got home late. I've been in New York for the weekend, but tonight when I get home, it's time to wrap them in cheesecloth with some apple brandy and start putting them in the fridge and get them to start aging and turning every week and those types of things.
So what's the ETA on when I'm coming over to eat some?
Well, if you're lucky, you'll get one for Christmas.
Oh.
But that's up to Jackie. You know, she's very proprietary about her fruit.
She should be. She is the one who makes it.
They're so expensive. When you look at the fruit that we put in there, you know, it's about 80% fruit and 20% cake. And it's when you buy the real deal, like you can find a real orange rinds and angelica and things like that down at Chef Shop down on Elliott there.
Oh, yeah.
You can find a lot of good dried fruit product. But it's expensive, man. I would bet each cake... easily $25 cost, maybe more.
It's a good gift.
It's a good gift. And that's before you start to work it.
That's free
okay.
gift.
So we're promoting our radio show aprons signed, mailed free to you, $25. Just go to our Seattle Kitchen. You've got some fragrances that you want to sell for Christmas.
Yeah, I got fragrances. I got an eau de toilette, a hand soap finish with beautiful oil to keep your hands soft, and a home diffuser. All three of them are made with four... scent, local, not local, organic scent of fig, green tea, lime, and bergamot.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all made locally by a small perfumer named Molly Ray.
There you go.
And she does a great job.
And how do people buy those?
So you go to chefinhatfragrances.com or you simply come to Lule, eat something, drink something, and then pick up the fragrance on the way out.
Wow, you get a fragrance free with every drink.
I didn't say free.
Oh.
Sorry. The drink might be free.
All right. So let's get into what Eater calls the best cookbooks of the year for the beginner cook. Chef, did you have a book that you loved when you were a young cook?
Well, when I was a young cook, it was my apprentice book. When you start your apprenticeship in France, they give you a book with 125 recipes in it, mm-hmm. and you have to learn every single one of them. You have 2 years to perfect them, and then you get tested for a whole day about making three of those recipes, and they pick randomly through the book, and you have to know them by heart. So the first day, you write them down, all the recipes and the processing and everything, and the next day, you have the practice in the kitchen, and there is 30 of you sharing a kitchen, kind of like the hot stove here, and you know, there's only a couple ovens, and if you're making, like I had for my graduation, a Genoise to make, which is something that does require not to open the oven, and there's 40 of you going in the same oven, you try to be smart. So you drop the butter in the sink, you don't put it in the cake, and your cake will rise, and that's how I got first prize for my Genoise.
You got first prize?
Yes. I only made it once in my life before, and I got first prize. Everybody else's Genoise was an inch and a half tall, and mine was 4 inches tall.
Wow, very impressive.
All this because I dropped the butter.
If you were to give a young cook, let's say your son, because I think we're not talking about a professional cook here, but let's say your son a beginning cookbook into his, he's just getting married, yeah. and he's, you know, he needs a little basis in his life. What would you give him?
Well, I think The New Basics by Julie Ross and Sheila Lukens has been probably my favorite American cookbook over the year to look at for any kind of, I mean, if I have a question about something that I don't know about very much that's more American tradition, I look in here, I know I'm going to find it. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to find it being really easy to make and practical, well explained. I've done a few recipes from this book. I can't recall which one. I know waffles was one of my thing when I started here. I was like, oh, I want to make some waffle, and I don't want it to make an American waffle. So there's all kind of beautiful recipe, and I would really recommend this because this book is probably, my wife bought this book probably 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's still in good shape.
Yeah, it's a paperback.
We have the other one, which is the first edition.
The Silver Palette book.
Yeah, yeah. Silver Palette as mm-hmm. well. So, mm-hmm. For a little bit more adventurous, people who want to learn maybe more about French, I would definitely go The Way to Cook by Julia Child,
mm-hmm.
which is a beautiful, it's a beautiful book. It's a little bit more advanced because you have to know a little bit about French and about some techniques. But it's very well explained. Julia was really good at making things a little bit simpler than what they were supposed to be.
She was verbose.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. That's a perfect word for it. But I would definitely recommend those two books as must-have in your kitchen, just for reference purposes, if anything else.
Yeah. For me, one of my favorites made the list here of the Eater one, which is called The Food Lab by Kenji Lopez-Alt.
Oh, yeah.
And what I love about his book is for a beginner cook is it really explains much of the science around cooking. And, you know, so often, you know, you attempt a recipe and why do they do that? I don't get it. And right. He explains why they do it very specifically. So The Food Lab, Better Home Cooking Through Science, I think is an awesome book. It's also a bestseller around America. Some of the books in the Eater list, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Salman Nasrat.
Great book.
Is it? I've not really used
it.
Yeah,
so. I've looked at it. I've looked through some of the recipes. That was like a couple of years ago when it came out. And there is some very intelligent
yeah.
recipe in there. Very well explained.
So of course, there's the classic Joy of Cooking,
yes.
which has been redone over the years a few times to kind of update it, make it a little bit more relevant to the day and age that we're in. Small Victories by Julia Tertian. And it's kind of breaking down the book into more individual sizes. You know, a lot of people aren't cooking for 6 or 8 or 10, right? They're
right.
cooking for themselves. So vegetarian books are really hot right now. The New Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone by Deborah Madison. I've known Deborah Madison for a very long time. She talk about thorough. She is very thorough, thoughtful, and doesn't skip, just to make it simple, right? But it doesn't have to be complicated at the same time. So
I think one that's not, I don't know if it's this, I don't see it in there, but Cooks Illustrated, you know, if you don't subscribe to that magazine, you should as a cook, if you like to cook. I think what I love so much about that is it's broken down by drawing of each step that you have to take, kind of like photo, except it's drawing, and it's super, super well explained. I think over the year, I've been very, very impressed by their explanation of recipe, how they break them down. Again, they explain why, which is, as a chef, you want to know why.
If you're a beginning baker, Simple Cake by Odette Williams, I think, is a great way to kind of not just learn how to make cake. I mean, not just make lots of different cakes, but learn how to make cake.
Right.
Learn the process. Understand how to make cake and be successful every time, rather than just freaking out. You pop the cake in the oven and you're freaking out like, oh, my God, it's going to come out, right? It gives you confidence in the kitchen, which is really a nice thing. Mark Bittman, of course, has been on our show a few times, How to Cook Everything. That's a book that I don't really know very well, but he gets a lot of compliments for that book. If you look at people's favorite books, that comes up all the time on people's list.
Right. He's a good writer, so I would guess, and it's a, I'm sorry, I don't know it either from head to toe. I know what, I've seen the book, but I think he's a good writer, so I think he would probably come out very good.
There's two more on here that I wanted to get to. One is called Vietnamese Food Any Day.
Yes.
And I'm going to buy this book for myself because I feel like I bastardize Vietnamese food a little bit. Like, I take some of the ingredients that I know are popular, whether it's fish sauce or fresh dill or toasted shallots, and I use them in all sorts of things that aren't Vietnamese at all because I love the individual flavor. But I would like to be a better cook when it comes to cooking Vietnamese.
I would love to make
a traditional Vietnamese way, because right now I'm a grab and snatcher. When it comes to little techniques that I see in the restaurants.
I'd love to make that banh mi I had in Hanoi. Oh, my God, it was the best banh mi ever.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one on the list is a person that I find fascinating that she has been so popular for so long, which is Ina Garten.
Oh, yeah.
And people are just amazed by her. I look at everyone shaking their head in the audience, too. It's like, I've never had a book of hers. I've never been on her TV show. I just don't know.
We should be on a TV show.
Well, I've been on a lot of those Food Network TV shows. I just never been on hers, right? So,
right.
It's interesting how she connects with people in a different way than certainly I have ever done.
Right.
So, good for her. She's
extremely popular.
I know. She's got like 5 of the top 10 selling cookbooks of all time.
Right.
That's impressive. So, Ina Garten's book, another one that Eater recommends for a young beginning cook.
And don't forget, if you want to get into the modernist of any kind, there is the modernist cuisine and there is the modernist bread books out there, the volumes out there. That's if you feel like spending some money for a gift, that's a beautiful gift to give.
It's beautiful.
And it will be a gift I will give for a long, long time because it's 2,400 pages.
Yeah. Not quite $2,400, but it's expensive. Let's talk about Art of the Table and Brendan McGill's new pizza joint when we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time to talk our favorite taste of the week. I have kind of an odd one this week.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
My favorite taste of the week is, you know, I've said this over the years, but once in a while I'm a Costco shopper, and there's a couple of things that I really like at Costco that I make sure I keep in my freezer or something. And usually it's a rack of the lamb, so it's all French and ready to go. I can literally cook it from frozen and have dinner on the table in 30 minutes with a beautiful rack of lamb. But once in a while I splurge, so I had a going away dinner for a person in our company who's been with us a long time. She's moving on to a new job, a new phase in her life. And so I had a dinner for her at my house last night, and I had picked up a 10-pound box of king crab legs at Costco.
Oh.
And they come in really nicely packed. I've had them before. I've used them for this or that. It's hard to find those number one Maris legs, you know, that are just unbelievably delicious. But I will say, not disappointed. They were so good, so perfect, and there's a couple of reasons why. One is that they are packed beautifully. It's not where you see them kind of IQF'd and sitting out in the case, and you know, they're all
dried
just kind
out.
Of dried out. Who knows how long they've been there? These are in a box, ready to go. And as long as you leave yourself a couple of days to let them thaw out naturally in the fridge, you're going to be just fine, right? The other thing about them is that they are huge. They are about those. There's kind of king crab that's about a pound per leg.
Damn.
And so they just are spectacular when they are thawed correctly.
Meat and sweet and.
It was a great bite.
How did
I made
you
a little
cook it?
Shiso. I didn't. That's the thing you can't
raw?
Do. You can't cook them.
Right.
They're not raw. They're pre. You know, all those crab legs are cooked.
Right,
already, right,
right, right. But I mean.
So I cut them with scissors, put them on the half shell. And then warmed them in the oven to about 100 degrees.
Right.
And then served them with a lemon thyme butter or a shiso mayonnaise that was with lime juice. That was so, it was just delicious.
Sounds delicious, yeah.
So simple, so easy, and, you know, the only other place I've gotten crab legs that good, really, are down at Mutual Fish down on Rainier Avenue.
Right.
So, and that's where I would go if I didn't want 10 pounds. That's a big nut, right? But I had a lot of people. So, but yeah.
Yeah, 10 pounds is a lot of crab.
Yeah.
That's a lot of crab.
But in king crab, when it thaws, you know, you lose, I would say there was no more than 5 or 6 pounds of meat after it thaws and after you take the shell off.
Right.
And so you get a lot of shrinkage.
That's a lot of crab meat, though.
Tina, you said you had a favorite taste of the week.
I did. I had a lovely evening, actually, last night. There's a new restaurant open at First in Marion. It's Brendan McGill's restaurant called Bar Taglio, T-A-G-L-I-O. Mm-hmm. It's a pizza spot, and he's doing something interesting with Roman-style pizza, which I had not had before. It's a little thicker, denser, mm-hmm. Crispy, though, still. So not like – it's very unique sort of pizza style. And my favorite was a chanterelle and lobster mushrooms, taleggio, rosemary, and a little like a Parmesan on top,
uh-huh.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Quite delicious. And you can go there and you can taste all kinds of different pizzas there because he does by the slice and by the individuals, so you have a wide variety. Lots of fresh ingredients. He really spent a lot of time sharing the depth that he explored and learned about how to make this very specific type of pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth checking out something unique and different in our city right now. So.
There's a few of those that are around town now, that Roman style pizza. One, Renee Erickson's got one here at the Spheres, the Amazon Spheres downtown, called Wilmont's Ghost.
Yeah.
She serves that kind of pizza. And then the other guy that opened one but closed it, Mike Easton, is that his?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had one downtown, but it didn't last very long.
Right.
Roman style pizza. So it's kind of a hot commodity right now.
Yeah, it's delicious. I had a really good time there.
Good.
So highly recommend.
This week, Kathy made a minestrone, which we hadn't had in a long time, but it's a perfect weather and the perfect time of the year. Diced onion, carrots, celery, beans. And then I bought some sausages from Crowd Cow, you know, the online meat, where you can buy your meat online.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful sausages from a farm down in the southern part of Washington. And put the sausages as the meat in there, sliced, and cooked them in there. And canned tomato, whole tomato, diced, put in there. That was absolutely fantastic, and it felt really good to eat that. We have our own chicken stock. We make our own stock, so go in the freezer and grab one of those quarts and put it into the soup, and it's really a great, and it's a big batch soup. So you give a quart to each of the kids and take that home, and they're happy as heck, and we eat the rest, and it's fantastic.
And all you have to do when you reheat that is to just put some fresh herbs in, and you've got a perfect minestrone right
now. Yeah, and I recommend making that while you're having lunch or dinner or whatever, because it's actually better as it gets older in the fridge. The vegetables start imbibing themselves with all that flavor. It's actually better as it moves along. Like 2-3 days later, it's actually a much better soup or stew, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. So I just love this. And grilled bread. Oh, I'm hungry right now.
Well, as many of you know, I was been consulting with Nordstrom for the last couple of years, getting ready to open Manhattan, and I was there this weekend. I went Saturday morning, came back Monday morning to check in on how things are going there. That's a long flight. It takes about as long to get from JFK to downtown Manhattan than it does from Seattle to JFK.
So that's a 10-hour flight.
I know, exactly. And it's about the same price, too. It was like $125 each way. Anyway, so I was just doing a check-in. They opened 3 weeks ago. I was there for that, and then I was just had a one-day check-in. So many people, when I'm standing out there in these three restaurants, so many people from Seattle coming by, and people that live in New York that used to live in Seattle. And,
oh, really?
What I found really heartening and really sweet was that they would come up and I guess I'm recognizable.
Yes, I would say you are.
Large person. And they would just say the nicest things, and then they miss what they miss most about Seattle is our restaurant scene here, and then also Nordstrom. because Nordstrom has never had a store in Manhattan,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So the store is beautiful. The restaurants are starting to really kick in and starting to get to a level that they should be at this point, right? There's seven restaurants in this huge store. Hani Pacific, which is more my style of cooking. It's kind of Pan-Asian, Hawaiian,
mm-hmm.
lots of teriyaki and, you know, deliciousness, fish sauce, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. And then, of course, there's Genie's there, too. But the big surprise has been the Omochi Donut Company. So
How is that doing?
At Assembly Hall, my little coffee juice bar, we have Omochi Donuts, which is a gluten-free donut situation.
Right. Delicious.
They're really fun and good. And so we put one of these in the Nordstrom, and they're selling 1,000 donuts a day.
Oh, my God.
1,000 mochi donuts a day.
This is when I don't want to be making donuts.
I know. And, you know, they're all handmade, hand-baked, hand-piped, hand-glazed,
yes.
hand-everything.
Yes.
And we have a spiced donut base, a butter donut base, a matcha donut base, and a chocolate base with different glazes, and then freeze-dried, beautiful kind of gem-colored fruits on top, whether it's ginger or strawberries or chocolate bananas.
Blueberries.
Or crispy bananas, you know. So it's really been fun to see and really heartening to know how much people love our restaurant scene. I said, Seattle restaurant scene, you're in New York City. It doesn't get much better than that. But we're different, right? We offer a different kind of approachability, and we're not you're not running down Fifth Avenue or 57th Street trying to fight traffic and
crowds.
And
to a lot of New Yorkers, we're fairly new on the market for them.
Yeah.
We've been around for a long time, but they just don't know about it. We just—it's a recent discovery. So,
well, it was good
hot
to see.
Again, Tom.
Yeah, it was good to see it, and so many people said such kind things about us and Nordstrom, and what a pleasure. That was super fun. Okay, up next, we're going to take a peek inside your fridge and make something delicious on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show.
Yes.
Very lively audience today. I'm sure we'll keep them clapping until they actually get a sandwich.
That's right.
Breakfast sandwich.
We got them for the first hour. Now let's do the second one.
I know. I can't wait. I'm a little hungry this morning. You know, my workout was very strenuous today. So just saying.
Mine too. Get out of bed and make a cup of coffee. That was hot.
Tina, Tina's our producer here at Large Media and at the mm-hmm. Seattle Kitchen Show. You have been looking in people's fridges. You're kind of a fridge snoop.
Yeah, fridge snoop. I like to go in there, see what's going on.
A fridge voyeur.
Actually, I don't get to physically go to people's homes and look in their fridge, though that would be very fun. I asked our fans to look inside their own refrigerators and mm-hmm. give us a list of what's inside, and with the hopes that you two could chef something up from the ingredients mm-hmm. in there.
Do you ever look in your fridge and think, God, I have no idea what to make out of this? Or there's
all the time.
Here's what I think a lot of people say. There's nothing to cook here.
Yeah, I think that's I've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
Well, I have nothing in the fridge. You open the fridge, there is barely any room left. And you're like, really?
I really wish there was an app, because now that I'm whole food plant-based, I have so many vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was something that I could just type in what I have. And then they could give me, like, you know, several different recipes or several different ideas.
My guess is there is something.
I got to look around. Because that would be very handy.
Yeah.
I was at Home Depot or something like this maybe a few months ago.
Where you buy your salmon, the Home Depot?
Yeah, fresh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From the fresh section, of course. But I was looking at the fridge. They have fridge with, like, TV screens and all kind of stuff. Why couldn't they just have you just click on it and put the ingredients and something comes up.
Yeah, it prints the recipe for you.
You should talk to GE and allrecipe.com, and I'm sure they could pop up something together.
Or like a replicator, like Star Trek? Yeah, Star Trek. Remember Star Trek? And you just tell it what to... Okay, I'll just...
That was before I was born.
Move on.
Tina,
I'm just going to go ahead.
This is your fridge talking to you.
Okay, let's just go right into the refrigerators. Tommy Kent Smith says he has some 3 slices of bacon, 1 very small radicchio, 1 endive, 2 eggs, and a 1/4 loaf of unsliced bread.
Salade Lyonnaise, huh?
Yeah, totally on top of that.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. Make a little red wine vinaigrette, olive oil. Vegetable oil, like safflower or something like this, with red wine vinegar and a little Dijon mustard. Make a nice little vinaigrette quickly. And then toss your lettuce in there.
Your escarole and your radicchio.
Your escarole and your radicchio, your endive, and your radicchio. Make a nice little tossed salad, and then poached an egg or 2. I'm a big fan of 2 eggs because usually when I eat a salad, you know, for lunch, I'm like, well, one egg is good, but two is better. So two eggs and then croutons with the bag, with the bread, and then tossed in the olive oil in the pan.
And the lardons render, out of the
render,
bacon?
Render your lardon. Cut your bacon very thick and don't cook it crispy. Just cook it so it's cooked all the way but still has a little chew to it. Then toss that all over your salad and you'll have a wonderful salad lyonnaise. Absolutely.
That's the first thing I thought of as soon as you said those ingredients.
Oh, yeah.
I love that lyonnaise salad.
Very, very simple.
All right. Nicole Brown has Japanese eggplant, Chinese broccoli, chicken thighs, lemons, and onion.
I think we're talking a stir fry here. Yeah. There, or you could just take your eggplant and make little slivers out of the ends of it. The Japanese eggplants are the long, thin ones, so you can take them and kind of quarter them, but leave them whole at the stem. So, that, and then just douse them with a little teriyaki sauce that you might have in the fridge, or a little make your own teriyaki sauce out of soy sauce, sugar, and sake, and ginger. And then just brush it on, put them on the grill, brush it on, caramelize up your eggplant. So same thing with your chicken thigh. Just you're going to put it right on your griddle or your grill pan. The same with the teriyaki, and now you've got just a nice little thing. And right before you serve it, squeeze lemon on top to freshen it up.
I mean all the way.
All right. Okay, Melanie Mark Guerrero has soy rizo, which is like a soy-based kind of fake meat.
Okay.
Onions, gluten-free breadcrumbs, gluten-free pasta, eggs, little red potatoes, and lots of condiments.
So forget the pasta for this dish. I'll just use the potatoes. So I would rizzle the potato with some onions, and then I would throw in the soy rizo in there and make a nice little stew, basically, of potato, soy rizo, and onions, caramelize the onions really nicely, and then put that all over a nice... where would you put that on top of? I would probably use a little salad to go with it.
Sounds terrible to me so far, Chef.
To make sure that it's balanced out.
I think they lost you at soy rizzo.
Onions, potato, and soy rizzo is a basic. I mean, it's like a good breakfast item.
Okay.
So I would put
like
a nice,
hash. So you make a hash.
Yeah, like a hash kind of idea. That's a great idea. Hash is a good idea.
Okay, I'm back on the train.
Okay, good. Yeah, potato, onions, and chorizo. I mean, who doesn't like that?
Totally. And then we're going to finish it with a little ketchup.
Oh, no.
And some fried eggs?
No ketchup.
Yeah, on hash.
You don't need to.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to.
With some peppers.
I'll use...
What are you going to do with all these condiments? I mean, they got to get rid of some of those.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Well, I would season the potato definitely with some of those condiments and...
Black bean chili crisp.
Ooh. That might be a very good idea. She probably has some of that in the fridge.
Pamela has alder smoked salmon, eggs, Canadian bacon, arugula, baby greens, and... every condiment known to mankind and a half a bottle of cheap red wine.
Well, the red wine and the smoked salmon, not a good combo.
No, not a good combo.
I made a little dish last night. This is going to take a little trip to the store. But I actually used, I want to say it was Macrina's kind of raisin pumpernickel last night. And I toasted it up in olive oil. And I made a little cream cheese with fresh dill and lemon zest. And then put on my smoked salmon on top of that. What a beautiful little... fall combination.
Yeah. It's a good way to start a meal.
Yeah, so if you can, I found that bread at the Shoreline Central Market, and it's a delicious little toasty, lovely fall bread. Okay, so much for the fridges. It's time now to revisit Christopher Lofgren of Bamboo Sushi, who's going to talk about hospitality and sustainability on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. As we promised last week, we were talking with Christopher Lofgren, chef owner or product development owner of Bamboo Sushi out of Portland, now opening in University Village. I would suggest you check out there. Last week we talked a ton about sustainable seafood and making the conscious choice to actually... search out sustainable seafood, and that it's
just like you and I do, Tom. It's not any, it's just we do it on a smaller scale. He's doing it on a bigger scale.
Well, yeah, so Bamboo is a small restaurant I've been to in Portland that's now choosing to go. Are you going to go nationwide, Chris?
Yep,
nationwide throughout the country, and we're just happen to have our own bamboo opening here at U Village. So I'm looking forward to trying that. So Christopher Lofgren is our guest. You know, last week we talked a lot about the fish. Let's talk about the team.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I find in our particular business, the restaurant business, that we do a lot of lip service to grass-fed, you know, was that better or worse than grain-fed, to sustainable, is farm good, bad, whatever it is. And yet, as an industry, we do a fairly poor job of how we handle our team.
Yep.
And for years, I've argued with the National Restaurant Association, you know, as they fought against health care, they fought against minimum wage, they fought against all sorts of things that were good for our teams. Matter of fact, I have some issues with how some of this has gone down myself. But when it comes to the team, what's best for the team is generally what's best for you, the owner,
yep.
And then eventually what's best for the customer. If the happier they are, the happier the customers. What do you do when it comes to your team to create the same kind of sense of consciousness around how you source your fish and then how you decide to handle your team?
Thank you for asking that question, because I fully, everything you said, I 100% agree with. And so, again, going back to the science and data perspective of things, we are B Corp certified,
mm-hmm.
and we were the first restaurant in the world to get that certification. B Corp has now become a pretty large set of independent, you know, auditing data for companies to aspire to be best in class, Patagonia being kind of the most famous one, along with Ben & Jerry's and some others. And so for us, you know, when we tell our team members that we pay higher or that these are their benefits or that we give paid vacation leave or that we're working towards 401ks or any of these things or that over 50% of our executive team are made up of women or that we have, you know, diverse ethnic minorities in our company, they can see all of that online and it's been audited. It's not just the owner selling them a bunch of, you know, lip service, as you put it, but it's actually us putting our money where our mouth is and walking the talk. And on top of it, not only does it allow our team members to see that, but it's a really great way for us to benchmark ourselves against anybody else in the industry who we think maybe we're doing really well, and then we see, wow, we're not doing as well in these other areas. We can go online. We can figure out how we can get more points. One of the ones I'm most proud of recently is there's a whole conversation, obviously, in our country right now around going cashless. And we went cashless, and a lot of people, of course, were concerned. Why? And one of the main reasons, besides the fact that our team is safer and it's a significantly more sustainable way to do business because we're not transporting armored trucks anymore, but one of the main drivers for me was we had to bank with Wells Fargo because when you have multiple locations across America, you have to have locations to do drops and deposits. Well, the only companies, the only banks in America that have enough real estate are the big banks, the ones that caused the crash, the ones that no one likes, and the ones that were a part of, you know, Wells Fargo is the largest funder of coal power plants in America.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get your money that's buying all of this sustainable fish, that's, you know, helping these team members to get paid better salaries and have these nice benefits, and then I take that money and I put it in my bank account, Wells Fargo turns it around and goes and fires up some coal power plants, which is completely anachronistic to our beliefs.
Complete opposite of what you started with.
And so what I started doing was I said, well, who are the best benefit corporation banks? Who are the banks who are banking LGBTQ
credit
issues? Credit unions, all these things. But a lot of those companies are only online now. So that one of the cool things is that because everything is done now in the digital economy, you can find these incredible organizations where the float is essentially now going to support causes that we care about, but maybe they don't have the branches. And so for us, we put that initiative out there, and so many of our guests who were upset at the beginning and who said, you can't do this, this is unfair, went, oh, wait, that actually makes a lot of sense. You're telling me that now my money is going to fund affordable housing in communities across America? Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that my money is now going to fund the unions because our bank is the largest backer of the unions in America? Yes, we are. So now we're actually saying we're walking the talk from start to finish, not just in the food that we serve, which is obviously what a lot of restaurants sort of stop at, but we do it in our built environment, we do it the way we treat our employees, and we also do it in the way we look at our financial resources.
Super interesting. I do feel like that's a missing piece of the puzzle oftentimes when we talk about the restaurant or hospitality business, is the consciousness throughout the whole organization and not just in whether or not it's grass-fed or grain-fed beef.
From A to Z as opposed to M to Z.
Yeah, our goal, the way we put it kind of in an elevator pitch is we want to become the largest socially and environmentally responsible restaurant company in the world. Hmm. So that's our primary
focus. So you only need 5 units.
Only 5 units. We're already there.
That's very
sad,
clever.
I know. Yeah.
We're working on it. So you're opening in University District, and I'm ashamed to say I haven't been there yet, but it's only been a week, so I don't feel too bad.
Yeah.
What's to be looking forward to over there?
So one of the things we're super excited about is the built environment that we did. So all of the materials and finishes in the space are super sustainable. So our floors are made out of recycled bottles, plastic bottles. Our outdoor furniture is made out of recycled fishing nets that came out of the ocean. And our indoor chairs are made out of the scraps in a wood manufacturing plant. And that they take basically the shavings on the ground and they compress them into the chairs. So there's a lot of really cool design elements, but the restaurant doesn't look granola and crunchy. It looks super sleek and very sexy.
I don't go with my Birkenstocks.
Yeah, no. I mean, you can. Birkenstocks actually came back somehow. I don't know how that one happened, but they did. And so, you can expect that. But then what I would say that we're really proud of is the centerpiece is the sushi bar, right? I mean, that's the engine. That's the heart of our business. And so we have this gorgeous 16-seat sushi bar that's right in the center of the restaurant that you can see full open kitchen, full open layout.
Wow. I can't wait. So much is happening in that U District, man.
Well, I've been to the one in Portland. Like I said, it's a delicious restaurant. Bamboo Sushi is the name. Christopher Lofgren has been our guest. We've been talking about the sustainability, not only of the fish that
you serve. Please support places like that. Support them.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, while we're not certified, we try to do the same thing, right?
Exactly.
Our team is the most important. At the top of the list for me. So that's, and I'm sure it's the same for you.
Of course, yeah. So, I try to be as good as you are, but congratulations for succeeding in that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's U Village, and I hope soon somewhere on the east side, it sounds like to me. But I'm breaking news right here on Seattle Kitchen. We're on Cairo Radio. It's 97.3 FM. How you doing out there? Yay! We are back in the Seattle Kitchen. It's Cairo Radio, and it's time for sides. We're going to talk turkey sides. We talked turkey last week a little bit, and this week we're going to talk about what to serve with it. I want to start with sweet potatoes.
Love them yam.
I do love yams, and I like them any way. I like them just baked like a baked potato, but you got to eat the skin, as far as I'm concerned. I like them cut up and sautéed, but you got to be careful not to let them get into a mash situation if you don't
Correct.
Want mash, right?
Because so, they will want to crumble much more than a regular potato.
You could toss them in olive oil, salt, and pepper and roast them in the oven just like you would roast a vegetable.
Grated like a little potato cake kind of idea.
Grated like a pancake. Absolutely. It's delicious. I do that with sesame oil and to make a little sweet potato pancakes.
With sesame oil, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I always do it in butter because we...
Well, it has butter too, but yeah, you can't use all sesame oil or it's going to be too strong.
Right, right.
But definitely butter and sesame oil.
That sounds like
there's
a good idea.
There's lots of ways to make sweet potatoes. The thing is, you have to be careful. You have to understand what your entire plate looks like because Thanksgiving is such a mishmash on your plate that you don't want a Chinese sweet potato with a classic American turkey with a roasted cauliflower or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right, so no, exactly.
It's really, you should think about your sides as they work with the entirety of your plate.
Correct. And if you're going to make a mash of potatoes, try not to make a mash of sweet potato. Try to be a little bit more diversified.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's work well with sweet potato is gratin. You know, I always
really?
Make gratin.
Yeah, I know you always make gratin.
But it makes a great gratin, and it's easy to make ahead of time. You can make that the day before. You know, a nice little Pyrex pan and butter it well. Put some sliced potato really thin, fairly thin, and then onions between the layers, and then nuggets of butter and cheese, and then bake that puppy up on Saturday for Sunday, or on Wednesday for Thursday, because Thanksgiving is on Thursday. And... the day of, you'll have a wonderful pan. All you have to do is just cut it in square and put it in the oven and warm it up for a few minutes and be done with that.
No cream, huh?
No, just cheese. A little bit of butter and onions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't put cream in much in sweet potatoes. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. What about Brussels sprouts? You know, when I was just back at Nordstrom, our number one selling dish is deep-fried Brussels sprouts. Which makes me a little twisted, I gotta tell you.
Well, if you deep fry them, you could put anything besides Brussels sprout. It probably would sell as well.
As long as you use the word deep fry?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Deep fried cauliflower? Deep fried cauliflower would probably sell as well.
Do you think? But there's something about Brussels sprouts that people are just...
Well, it's on the trend of... It's definitely, when they talk about trends, for some reason, Brussels sprout has been on the trend, just like kale was a few years ago. I think Brussels sprout has taken the train... just
yeah,
like
yeah, but boiled like boiled Brussels sprouts or roasted Brussels sprouts, people don't think the same way. But for some reason, they've fallen into the deep fried category.
Right, right. Agreed so. With that.
And I say it makes me twisted. I mean, it's on the menu. It's not like I didn't put it on the menu, so I'm not twisted in that way. But I wish sometimes that vegetables would just sell without the fat. You know, so a lot of times Brussels sprouts are just coated in bacon fat or with bacon or deep fried or something. I just wish they would. I think they're delicious on their own.
Oh, absolutely.
And the other way to take them is put them on a mandolin and shave them really thin, and they stir fry in about 1 minute.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
People always think they have to cook Brussels sprouts. And then you really get a nice Brussels flavor rather than that kind of stewed, stinky flavor that when people boil them too long.
Well, I think also if you just toss them, cut them in quarters and toss them in a little bit of olive oil, salt and pepper, very simple, and put that on a sheet pan, put it in the oven at 500 degrees, you're going to get Brussels sprout in 20 minutes. You'll have the most beautiful Brussels sprout with a nice
and that'd be a good,
nice little char on the outside and beautiful flavor.
And good for your turkey plate, too.
Absolutely.
Okay, mashed potatoes.
50% potato, 50% butter.
Ooh. What about other vegetables? What about parsnips or celery?
I mean, I like the, but you know what? When you're going to be laying down on that couch afterwards, this is the thing you're going to remember the most.
What about putting a percentage, say 50% potatoes, 25% parsnips, 25% celery root?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That gives you a nice fragrance in
your
potatoes.
No, absolutely. Yeah. This is the battle of the root vegetable, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think celery root and parsnip, those two vegetables, marry with potato absolutely magnificently.
And the key for me is to not boil all that stuff, right?
Correct.
The key for me is to go low and slow and use cream as your liquid.
Reduced cream.
Not even. You don't even have to reduce it, but whatever. I'm telling my story here.
Okay. I was trying to make it a good story.
Ooh, there's a shot. Anyway, so the important part is to not boil all the goodness out of your stuff and then dump away that starchy water. Just kind of simmer it in the cream and let the potatoes and the parsnips cook.
Yeah,
and then cut them in sizes relevant to each other so they all cook about the same amount of time.
And also, if you feel it's too wet when you're done, just throw them on a sheet pan in the oven. Your oven's already on. Just put them in the oven for a few minutes so then they can get rid of that extra moisture. So then when you add your cream and your butter, it doesn't become a soupy mess. It instead stays together and becomes a mash.
All right, stuffing. I have lots of opinions on stuffing.
I don't do stuffing.
You don't do stuffing? Ooh.
I do sauteed mushroom. Inside the turkey, I put citrus, rosemary, and bay leaf. That's all I put in there.
Uh-huh.
And salt.
Oh, I'm not saying it has
pepper.
To be inside. I'm not
no, I know. On the side, my wife used to do a wild rice stuffing a long time ago, but we haven't done that in a few years.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
All the rice has been domesticated.
Exactly.
Get it? Wild rice, domesticated rice.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Stuffing. Nice rustic bread, fresh bread.
Right.
Don't put it on top of your fridge and let it sit for a week and get stale.
Right.
And then put stale bread with all your fresh ingredients, right? Use fresh bread and toast it for your stuffing. I use dried porcini mushrooms so that I can have the broth from rehydrating them.
Sure.
And then I mince the porcinis into the stuffing.
Right.
I use fresh shiitakes or any sort of mushroom, onion, celery, those big, hearty, rustic breadcrumbs. And I always cook it on the side so that I get a nice, crunchy stuffing. One of the things I don't like in my Thanksgiving turkey plate is for every texture and temperature to be exactly the same.
Oh, no, that's
right?
Not good.
So then it's just a big pile of mush.
Yeah.
So my stuffing being crispy, and now I can have some good creamy mashed potatoes, right?
Just like the cranberry sauce. I cannot stand it hot.
Oh, yeah.
I like to be room temp or lower, but not hot. Mm-hmm. I've been to places where they serve it hot. I was like, no, man, it's like, that's like not so nice.
Yeah.
Not so nice.
And then a great gravy.
But also, as I was going to say, as somebody's mentioned earlier, somebody from the East Coast, from Memphis, talking about huckleberry in Seattle, you could make a nice little huckleberry sauce for a change instead of cranberry, and that would be a beautiful side to your turkey.
The cranberry farmers in the cranberry farmers in Grays Harbor are freaking out right now. So you better be careful, chef.
I know they got one day out of the year, and I just sabotaged it. Okay, never mind. Not for Thanksgiving, for Christmas.
Okay. So gravy. Now, that is something that you might make.
That's something I make every year, but I never make gravy. I make sauce, meaning that I don't put any flour or starch added to my reduction. I take the pan where the turkey was roasting, and actually from the pan, I stop the turkey to sear it first, then put it in the oven, really high heat for about 30 minutes. Then I turn the heat down to about 300, 325. And that's how I cook my turkey. Then when the turkey is ready, before it's ready, I throw in all the onions, all the root vegetables. Usually it's parsnip, carrots, celery, and I put all that on the bottom of the pan and finish to cook the turkey with the vegetables so everything comes out of the oven ready. Then I take everything out and deglaze with a little bit of white wine or red wine, which depends on what I have around. And then I just reduce that down. Then I add some chicken stock or veal stock, whatever I have in the house, reduce that down, finish with a nice little nugget of butter, strain the whole thing and keep it on the stove, and it's ready to go. And it's a jus, it's a thicker jus because I reduce everything down, so it's a jus with consistency, but mm-hmm. I don't need to add flour. What for?
It's well, because it makes a delicious gravy. That's
well,
why.
Actually, it's a delicious sauce. Fine, call it a sauce. It's not a gravy. But it's still delicious.
No, I'm just saying. There's a difference in my mind. The gravy definitely has flour. Your right. sauce reduction doesn't, right?
So, yeah.
But you said, why add flour? I said, because it makes a delicious gravy.
Right.
That's like telling the people down in New Orleans they can't have etouffee or they can't have...
I didn't say they cannot have it.
Yeah.
It's I'm like, just saying, I mean, why?
Yeah, I'm just saying. Why? Because it's delicious.
No, of course.
What more needs to be said? Yeah. I will tell you how delicious it is. I think I make the best gravy
okay.
in the entire city of Seattle.
Let's listen on them. Listen up.
No, I'm not going to listen. I'm going to say, if the first person that goes to our Facebook page and says, I want Tom's recipe for gravy out of the Tom's Big Dinner Cookbook, I'm going to send them a book. And they'll have it in time to make the best Thanksgiving
Wait,
gravy.
Wait, hold on one second.
I'm just saying.
I got a Rover's cookbook here. Let me just check in there.
No, so you have no gravy in there. So you don't know anything about gravy.
No, they're going to have a sauce to make.
First person, Facebook page, Tom Douglas, Seattle Kitchen. Hmm. Gets Tom's Big Dinner's cookbook, and I'll sign it.
Our audience, they can't qualify this song.
Why not?
Because they
I already see him. He's texting right now.
they're hearing it before. That's not fair.
All right, our audience is cheating, but that's okay by me. I've cheated on my quiz many times. It's time for us to wrap that segment up. Anyway, Brittany couldn't make it today. We thought we were going to have Brittany Bartleben, so. That's what we did instead. Turkey sides. Next up, it's Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge right here at the Hot Stove Society. Thank you for joining us. We're here every week for, well, unless we get booted by the Seahawks or somebody, but we're here every week. If you don't get us live, then you can get us on a podcast. Your favorite podcast station, Cairo Radio. Chef Janet here from the Hot Stove is going to join us, and we are going to take it easy on her, Chef. What do you think?
I've never heard you say that before.
I know.
Take it easy on.
We're
going to let her win today.
He must have gotten beaten at the gym, Janet.
Yeah. Tina, what do you got for us?
All right. It is time for your favorite part of the day, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Here's how the game is played. You each will get 5 questions. Trivia questions on all kinds of various foodie things. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least correct is obviously not the winner. They must give something away to a fan of this radio program. Today you'll be playing for Joel, who bravely came up to the microphone and asked you a question about fish sauce.
He's also the one that went right to his phone to try and get the Big Dinner gravy recipe.
So Joel will win something today, Joel. So you don't have to cheat any longer, buddy. All right. So if you should lose our quiz today, Chef Thierry, what would you like to give to Joel?
Have you been to Luke yet? All right. So I'm gonna get you 2 burgers, and I have a copy of a cookbook here. You like to cook, right? And a bit. Do you have Rover's cookbook? I just was looking in my books today. And
I love
I found
the Rover's
this. I'm like,
cookbook.
Oh, I'm going to give that to somebody. So if I lose today, you get 2 burgers at Luke and a Rover's cookbook.
Wonderful.
And that book's been out of print for a while now.
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
that's a rare
it's
book.
It's a very rare edition because even on Amazon, I think there's like 3 left and they're like $80. I'm like, never mind. That book is now $80.
Mm-hmm. All right. Chef Janet.
Yes. Should I lose? Ha ha. Two tickets to the Baker's Corner Bread Baking 101 on Sunday, December 8th, with Geraldine Brousseau and the Hot Stove team. Geraldine was part of Restaurants Unlimited and started Cinnabon, so she knows her stuff and talks all about bread baking and interesting local flowers. And it's it was a really popular class the last time. So
fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's using all those beautiful flowers from up north.
Yeah, up in Mount Vernon. Yeah. Karen Springs.
Bread Lab.
Bread Lab, yeah.
All right. Chef Tom Douglas, what will you give to Joel should you lose today?
Oh, I'm going to give Joel, since he tried to cheat on the cookbook, I'm going to just give him the book, and then that way our listener, our first listener that he wants my gravy recipe out of that book. Now, that book is for roast pork. The gravy is for roast pork, but you just use the technique for your turkey gravy. It's just
wonderful.
FYI. So he's going to get a copy of that book.
Wonderful.
All right.
All right. Who would like to go first today?
I'll start.
All right, Chef Thierry. Larding is the cooking technique where you what?
When you put, you wrap something in bacon.
Nope. That no, was barding.
In fat, pardon me.
Yeah,
not
fat.
In bacon.
Fat.
Well, wait a second. I thought it was inserted in the roast. He said wrap. Barding is wrap.
Barding is wrap.
Larding is when it's inserted
in. Larding
inside.
Is a big...
Tom is correct.
Yes.
Tom is correct, and I didn't get it right.
All right, Chef Thierry, why is sautéing and deep frying considered dry heat? Is it A, fat is opposite to water, thus cooking with fats is considered dry heat? B, these methods are named for what can happen if you overcook meat using these methods? Or C, they are not cooked in traditional moist heat, cooking liquids such as water, wine, or stock? Why is sautéing and deep frying considered dry heat?
I'm going to go with number three.
The answer is actually A. Fat is opposite to water, thus cooking with fats is considered a dry heat. That was convoluted.
50-50, and I took the wrong 50. All right.
All right, Chef, question number three.
So far, I'm doing great.
Well, not only that, but it was three chances, so that's actually 33.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
All right. Oh, you have plenty of time to still score very high on this quiz. In Moroccan cooking, lemons are preserved in a mixture of oil and salt while being kept away from light for 40 days. What is the main culinary objective for preserving these lemons? Is it to create a lemon oil concentrate? To bring forth the mellow, sweeter aspects of the lemon? Is it to begin the process of making pickled lemons? Or to refine the bitter zest of the lemon?
I'm going to go with number... You had four, right? I'm going to go with number two.
Number two is correct. To bring forth the mellow, sweeter aspects of lemon. All right, question number four for you, Chef. What flavor profile is specifically unique to Ethiopian coffee beans? Is it spicy and earthy with low acidity, brown sugary sweetness with citrus notes, chocolate flavor with slight wine notes, or a full-bodied fruit notes with high acidity?
Yeah, number four.
Correct. That is correct. High acidity. Your last question.
Good luck on that one, Chef.
I know. It's nutty. Your last question, Chef. See, you came back.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
2-2.
Yeah. When you shorten a baked good, what are you doing to the end product? You have some options.
You're eating the muffin top.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything besides eating the top of something. Yes, I would be shortening it.
You want to hear your options? Okay. Cutting the recipe in half to reduce the amount made. Adding fat to the recipe to create a more tender end product. Adding additional cold water to shorten gluten bonds, making a softer end product. Or making tiny versions of traditional baked goods. As Tom suggested.
So what was the first one you said?
Cutting the recipe in half to
reduce... Yeah, I would go with that. That shortened the recipe.
It's actually adding fat to the recipe to create a more
tender
product. I
had a feeling that wasn't right, but it sounded the most logical.
Two correct,
Chef. Big show today. Big show.
Right.
Two.
You never know what could happen.
Janet, you're in.
Ooh.
Joel, those burgers are sounding good, huh?
Yeah.
Chef Janet, if you see a potica on a Slovenian menu, what are you about to order? A, a traditional bread roll with nuts. B, a sausage spiced with fermented garlic and paprika. C, a variety of porridge. Or D, a soup made with caraway seeds, flour, and beaten eggs.
This is a pure guess, and I know that Tom probably knows this, but I'm going to go with B. The sausage.
A sausage. Nope. Tom, do you know it?
Mm-mm.
Huh? It's the bread with rolled nuts.
Ah.
Yeah.
I did set you up for failure, though.
Potty talk. It sounds like potty
said,
talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I thought she said at first. I was like, potty talk.
Your next question, Chef Janet. What is the process of adding a sour flavor to food without an acidic base liquid? Brining, pickling, fermenting, or steeping?
Pickling.
The answer's fermenting.
Fermenting.
It's a tough quiz today, you guys.
Holy
it's really
smokes.
Tough. This next one is true or false. True or false, there is no difference between heavy cream and whipping cream.
I think I will say that is true.
It's false.
Oh,
yeah. Oh boy.
Uh-oh.
Let's come back, Janet. I have faith in you.
Okay.
Which of the following spices is not harvested from a tree? Cinnamon, allspice, or paprika?
Paprika.
Correct. Nicely done. Tom is... You can't see this
phone a friend.
As you're listening,
can I phone
but Tom
a friend?
Is taunting her silently. Your last question. Buttercream frosting comes in a variety of forms. What makes the French variation of buttercream frosting unique? Is it whipping hot syrup and water in egg white foam with softened butter? Is it made with vegetable shortening instead of butter? Is it a combination of pastry cream and butter? Or... is it hot syrup into egg white foam with softened butter added to it?
That would be I think I'll go with number 4.
You're correct. D's the answer.
All right, we have a tie at the bottom.
Tie at the bottom.
Okay.
Chef Tom Douglas, 2 is the number to beat for you today. Which of the following knife cuts results in the smallest end product? Brunoise, julienne, or fine julienne?
Brunoise.
Correct. Which of the following is not a difference between fish roe and caviar? Which is not the difference. They come from the same fish. They are both internal egg masses. They are both salt cured, or they can both originate from the green sturgeon.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me. So
me neither.
So I'm going to go with 1. I don't know.
Salt. I would go with salt.
No, the answer is they're both internal egg masses. Question number 3 for you. Most historians agree that the concept of fast food in America started in 1921 by which outlet? McDonald's, White Castle, or Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Oh, White Castle.
Correct. What type of cocktail served in a copper mug?
A mule.
What kind of mule?
A Moscow mule.
Correct.
All right, so I'm going to forego my last question because these two need to do a slap off.
All right.
Ready? I'm going to watch.
You two, the tiebreaker question is this. Limburger cheese comes from which country?
Germany.
Switzerland.
Nope, that's... You were first.
Limburg. I said Germany.
First. Neither of you were right.
It's Austria. It's actually Austria.
Nope.
It's France.
Nope.
No.
Where is it from?
Belgium.
Belgium.
Oh. We both lost.
No, you lost.
Okay, I lost first.
You lost first. All right, burgers and Luke.
And a cookbook.
Congratulations, Joel. If you want to be part of the show like Joel, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter or come to the Seattle Kitchen Show at the Hot Stove Society. You're listening to us on 97.3 FM. That's Cairo Radio. The show is produced by Large Media. That's LARJ Media. And our sound engineer is Sean. Don't call me Del Torre. Production assistant is Abigail Leong. Special thanks to our guest and to the folks at Hot Stove Society for helping out. If you want to be part of the studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can find it at your favorite place to get a podcast, including the Cairo Radio app.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.